Andrew, it'd be the obvious route to market, or another route to market to getting people to hear what we're actually doing. So LHMN. Yeah. Fine. Okay. So we might as well get started. So welcome to month 5 Investable ETO briefing. And the one we're presenting today covers the trading period from the 1st of May to the 31st of May. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations, or bills issued under contract for assets, goods and services that are supplied to investment quality companies or credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. Broadly speaking, what this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. We call these micro to medium sized supplier businesses or originators because they originate the debt obligation transactions that create the ETR that are subsequently traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange by these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. In doing so, when the ETR is settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin. And that's the margin that creates the yield or return for your investors. So credit exchange also provides other type of credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and others. Essentially, they all work on the same principle that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides liquidity, and it's paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way a bank charges interest. Speaking about banks, the Central Bank of Ireland's second financial stability review for 2020 came out recently and notes that since the onset of the pandemic, central banks across the world have worked to maintain loose financing conditions by keeping interest rates low and launching bond buying initiatives like the European Central Bank's almost $2 trillion pandemic emergency purchase program. These have all helped to keep down borrowing costs, not only for governments, but for businesses alike. But on the other side, debt levels have risen and lower bond yields mean lower returns for investors. So many of these investors have turned to riskier punts in their hunt for returns. They note in the same report that there is, quote unquote, evidence of increased risk taking in financial markets. Wonder where we've heard that before. Anyway, this has also created the potential for sudden corrections in the global market that will be transmitted to the Irish financial system. They even go further to state that the global risk currently, or as they see it, has reached levels seen just before the bursting of the dot-com bubble back in 2001. So the report highlights what it calls a series of isolated events, including the case of the collapse of Archegos Capital in March of this year, and then that whole GameStop episode back in January. So although the Archegos downfall was largely limited to unlucky backers like the Credit Suisse bank, the report did go on to say that while not systemic in isolation, these episodes highlight vulnerabilities in the financial markets and that are included in a lot of these leverage products. So a sudden market correction could lead to a deterioration of the global financial conditions quite rapidly, with an adverse consequence for the economic recovery, particularly in the case of Ireland, given its circumstances with Brexit. So, given these warnings, credit exchange continues in our assertion that we should maintain our focus on international trade, and that that international trade and shipping is the correct focus for us, for the group's activities during these precarious times. You should also be aware that currently there is no leverage used in any of our funds. So returning back to the briefing, it states that at the end of the May, at the end of May, Credit Exchange held active RSA of 17.43 million. And this has remained stable at levels of circa 18 million since the beginning of the year. As you will know, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement, and a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium sized business or the originator and Credit Exchange. So that revolving sale agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period, typically 1 year. Taking the example that I always do, where an originator needs a revolving credit facility of 250,000 in order to run their business, they come to the exchange, much like they would go to a bank. They apply for that facility, and if we agree to offer it to them, the 250,000 on a revolving basis, on every 60-day basis, then ultimately they're agreeing to sell us 250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, and therefore the RSA, or revolving sale agreement, is worth 1.5 million over a 12-month period. So this commitment to sell 1.5 million of ETR annually to the exchange is what is documented in the RSA contract, so the form that you see at the back of the investable brochure. It's that document that's signed with the exchange. As stated at the end of March, Credit Exchange held, as stated at the end of May, Credit Exchange held 17.43 of these active RSA contracts as at the 31st of May. So these contracts continue to remain short as trading patterns and the speed of settlement continues to shorten, simply because the cash-to-cash life cycle is decreasing with more use of letters of credit, and indeed the speed of settlement on transactions, particularly in the area of commodities. So trade finance in its purest form, supporting commodity trades and shipping-related transactions, is now a core activity on the trade desk. Last month, I mentioned the significant increase in leasable assets, that there was no significant increase in leasable assets over the past 12 months. And there was a nominal increase in the assets since December of 2020. On two separate occasions, the teams here examined the car leasing market back in 2016 and 2020, where on both occasions we declined to proceed. But as I speak, we're back looking at this market again, and for the third time looking at it, it seems like the indicators are much stronger than on our two previous examinations. From what we believe to be reliable information, currently there are more than 90% of lease applications for cars that are being declined by the banks in Ireland. In the UK, although the market is different, just given its sheer size, it also looks promising. So the deal desk is at advanced stages of negotiating this market with a new provider, and subject to trade desk and the credit team approval, we may finally enter that market. So more on this next month after our board meeting on the matter. More importantly, and as expected, month five, May, saw the company make its first significant leasable purchase by buying six vessels. These were carefully selected from more than 30 or more trading opportunities, and were chosen for many reasons, one of which that Shell Oil had contracted for the short to medium term on one of the ships in question, and working to a strict mandate of selecting originators with a strong track record in their industry, the focus is to seek low loan-to-value ratios tracked by a proven cash flow history from strong and reliable covenants. So these assets underpin our primary focus, being that of trade finance. On that, just for those of you who aren't clear on exactly what trade finance is, it's the use of financial products, in our case ETR, that are used by companies to facilitate international trade between a company in one country and a company in another country. So in March, I spoke of the Baltic Index, that it was going to go above the 3,000 level this year, and that was a strong positive indicator of international trade in general. So this index continues to rise and fall, but as of today, I think it's above 3,250. So at prior briefing, as I also mentioned, our monitoring of future freight agreements or FFA markets. These derivative financial futures predict cargo transport prices ahead of time, and they too are another strong indicator of trade flow in general. So in the past 2 months alone, what's called the Panamax 4TC that covers the Brazil-China route has doubled from 18 to 36,000. If you look at the wider markets, volumes continue to rise and are indicative of a market that is predicting strong short-term growth, with things like the World Container Index, which is published each month. The average composite index has more than doubled, or 2.5 times its average 5-year rate in the last 6 months alone. The similar containerized freight index looks the same in terms of it also has doubled almost to 3 times and is at an all-time high since the creation of the index in the first instance. And all the while, analysts in a company called Allied Research down in Athens stated in their report that assets seem to be still underpriced when compared to today's period rates, making any buying decision at these numbers a safer bet than they have seen in recent years. So nice to see that we're in a rising market with strong underlying assets and good short to mid-term outlook. To round out these sentiments, there's Clarkson's research in London. Their recent assessment of the charter rates of the 4,400 TEU ships that are currently trading at 56,500 per day. This daily rate was at 25,000 mark back in January, so six months ago, and beats the all-time 70-year container index record of 50,000 that was set back in 2004. So the shortage of capacity has pushed these rates to these record levels on key routes from China to the US, China to Europe, and vice versa. With tight box and vessel capacity against the backdrop of strong consumer demand, retailers have struggled to build inventory. So it is a similar story for the dry bulk sector, as you can see from the doubling of the FFA rates from 18,000 to 36,000, as I mentioned a moment ago. Wet markets seem a little bit unfazed at the moment. According to the outlook, as far as we can see, it is strong for the remainder of this year, especially as the sector prepares for the upcoming peak autumn season and the lead into the Christmas season. As the briefing is about May's trades, the sharp upturn to the positive continued from April into May, as we can see in the middle of the briefing document under performance. We have all but recovered our position, and the results at the end of April were mirrored by the results at the end of May. So if you compare May 2020 to May 2021, we are actually ahead of the figures that we had last year. So we're continuing our trading style in that way and appear to be in sync with the markets that we're serving. I did talk about inflation last month, and this continues to be a concern. And as I mentioned earlier, the Financial Stability Review is concerned with some international markets overheating. The indicators mentioned earlier would seem to suggest that shipping and international trade is also heating up to disappoint. But I don't believe that's the case. I can't credibly comment on the equities market and explain why it has had such a long and sustained period of growth, but I can say and speak about the rise in shipping and trade and to its sustained growth being based on sound and simple market principles of supply and demand. There is a lot of demand out there that will continue to drive the sector forward for several years, in my opinion. As you heard in last month's briefing, we're not the only ones who hold this view. I mentioned that Michael Burry, whose notoriety from that film, The Big Short, entered the market in April, and he was joined in May by the Soros Fund Management Group. So Soros may be known as the man who broke the Bank of England, but it's actually the CIO there that led the fund into shipping. She is a second generation Irish American, and as the chief investment officer at Soros, her track record is almost as impressive as her boss. Her name is Dawn Fitzpatrick, who among many other achievements was named as one of Business Insider's most powerful women on Wall Street as far back as 2013. Prior to the collapse of the financial markets, when she was global head and CIO at O'Connor and Associates, that was a standalone business inside UBS Global Asset Management, she had an interesting meeting with the then CEO of Lehman Brothers, Dick Fuld. Her assessment of the market at the time and Lehman's over-leveraged position in it led her to a confrontation with Fuld on the matter. As a prime broker to US, Fuld essentially dressed her down on how her assessment of Lehman's position was grossly inaccurate, if not completely wrong. At the meeting, it's rumored that Fitzpatrick told Fuld that prior to the meeting, she had already cut UBS's exposure to Lehman by 50%, and that if he didn't get his act together, UBS would be closing their account completely. When Lehman did collapse, UBS's exposure was substantially less relative to what it could have been. It was only at $300 million, given that Lehman was their prime broker. So, as CIO at Soros, it is she that would have chosen to invest in shipping debt and is a positive mirror that matches what we are doing. So whether it's Burey's move that favored shipping stock or Fitzpatrick's move into debt, both of them run contrary to the market that has seen the majority of private equity giants continuing to sell out of it. Returning back to the briefing, it states that there was 35.97 million of euro fully allocated, and this is a major jump of more than 50% in a single month. As you may recall from April's briefing, we had allocated circa 24 million, and now, as you can see, it has jumped to 36 million. What this fully allocated figure means is that the exchange held 36 million worth of ETR on the 31st of May, 2021. And this means that there was 35.97 million worth of investors' funds in the market on the last day of May. If you add that number to the 17.34 of RSA, or revolving sale agreements, that represents the futures orders we have in our books and that we have not yet filled, it totals more than 53 million. And this is another strong jump of more than 34%. And again, all of this in a single month. Moving on to the next figure, May's briefing shows that investors redeemed 570,000 And that's consistent with prior months and indeed prior years. Typically, the ratio of money in versus money out runs at about 2 to 1. But in May, the ratio was 5 to 1, meaning that for every euro that left the exchange, 5 came in. As you know, these investors' funds are a mixture of private companies using ETR as a safe haven for their cash, and even a split of pension funds of, for example, ARF, PRB, PRSAs, and so on. And then there's also a strong contingent for private investors' savings. The current economic and social crisis continues to be good for investable ETR, with continued liquidity and stability in our market as we enter the second half of 2021. This then brings the focus of the briefing to the ETR average duration figure of 96 days. And this number, as you know, is what we call the credit index. It is the ETR average duration, or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. So the number seems to be holding stable at in or around the 90 mark from the end of last year and early January. The exchange's average, though, is 75 days. And we're seeing a certain resistance to it moving back towards that number. The credit index is the cash-to-cash cycle. So from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash, and the number it takes, number of days rather it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled, and the cash is returned. At 96 days, it's going in the right direction, but it's still 20% higher than it should be. So it is a good economic indicator of our market, the market that we are trading, that is. So the market looks to be getting back to business as usual. Looking at May's ETR briefing, there's the trading result then of 12.22 million in May. And this is another medium result for the year, as it was with last month, but it's considerably higher than the same month last year. As you know, we had a poor quarter one, and we continue to trade well and are making up for lost ground. So year on year, May of 2021 was almost 20% ahead of the figure for May 2020, but unfortunately, we're still a long way off the target that we set for this year. Below last month's trading figure of 12.22 is the treasury performance of 12.57 million. This means we spent slightly more than 12 million and we collected 12.5. As with April, trade and treasury are aligned because treasury is settling ETR trades marginally faster than the trade desk are buying them. As always, trade desk and treasury continue to monitor this trade balance of funds in versus funds out to ensure it remains stable and within the control parameters set down by the credit risk policy that governs the risk and general exchange trading policy. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money as at the 31st of May. And as usual, you can see the HSE hold their slot as they've done for over a year now. We also see the repeated appearances of Atradius, Vodafone, Cork City Council. PRM also remains for a second month, and so does IGM Timber. Moving to the right-hand side, the top 10 rated investable ETR, there's the regular reappearance of MediaMath, Paramount, and others. Again, these are the highest rated debtor, as none of these debtors, I should say, are rated. This is a selection of, shall we call them, the a sampling of the best credit rating that we have that is not, unfortunately, investment grade at this time. Moving to the pie chart below these two sets of lists continues to demonstrate a significant change in what is typically the well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. The HSE here and the NHS in the UK, along with others in the health community, did remain stable at the 15.29% mark in May. Since quarter two of last year, this pie chart has a repeated heavy exposure to the wholesale retail market. And as every time this is mentioned on the briefing, it is more wholesale and food retail based as opposed to high fashion main street retail. As many of you may well know, organizations like Tesco, Musgraves and others make regular appearances on our top 10 largest holdings. So looking at the wholesale trade, this continues to perform well and has remained in an inner between 35 to 40% for the past 12 months now. So food and beverage held steady at around 7% mark, and both manufacturing and the business and services sector also held steady at between 10 and circa 8% respectively. Construction almost doubled from around 7% in March, April to just over 12% in May, and is no doubt a welcome change for many that depend on that sector. And apart from these, there was no other significant changes recorded. The pie chart still continues to reference the EU NACE categorization system, and the adoption of our own credit classification is a component part of the new credit machine software. As you know from prior briefings, this is due for release in the second half of this year. And in fact, I'm told is going into live production sometime next week, if the meeting that Andrew and I were at this morning is to be believed. More on that next month. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in May of 2020 versus May 2021, you can see a very strong doubling in trading value and a two-thirds increase in volume as well. As stated earlier, the total amount of investor withdrawals was 0.57 million. I've also discussed the credit index, and to finish out the performance in May, the largest single trade finance deal was for 1.67 million. As explained in the investable brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is circa 2,000 euro. But we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was valued at 1.67 million. This is an interesting trade. As I speak today, we have seven similar transactions in various stages of progress right now. These trades use a combination of extensive shipping market knowledge and future freight agreements or FFA contracts, whereby our originator is able to book cargo for some of the world's largest commodity traders and move it at prices that the commodity traders' own in-house shipping departments can't compete with. So in the world of shipping, it's very difficult to fix a ship or book a ship any more than 6 or 8 weeks ahead of the time when you actually need it. Not if you want to get competitive rates on the day. So this means that commodity trade contracts can't be closed. Hence the reason why large commodity trading houses have their own shipping departments. However, even the largest and best of them struggle to compete against the highly sophisticated freight specialists in the market. So working together with Credit Exchange, these brokers and specialists are able to extend their market reach and take on more business from, as I stated earlier, some of the world's largest commodity traders. As we get more familiar with this market, and also at the same time as we complete the rollout of our credit machine trading system, we'll be able to systematically trade with our originator partners in ways that few, if any, finance provider could even dream of. Just as it takes many, many years to become a specialist in the shipping industry, so too does it take to achieve the same level of confidence in our industry. So these two uniquely independent and yet at the same time complementary industries and interrelated activities when combined with sophisticated trading systems such as this credit machine means that by us working together with these specialist traders hand in glove, these transactions are as unique as they are valuable and are laying the foundations for an exciting future for Credit Exchange and the credit group as a whole. Finally, moving to the trend section of the May briefing, you can see that the investor's yield or buy price during May started at 2.07 and ended just below the 2.85 percent. So that should be 2.085, excuse me. So with the negative yield of circa 1% on bank deposits, the investors are getting yield that is now over 3% better by having exchange traded receivables as their cash equivalent offered by Credit Exchange. As you all know, that rate changes daily and can be checked anytime on the investable.com website. Back in April, we decided to artificially prop up this price and we pushed the yield to more than 2% as part of a drive to bring in more funds into the exchange. May's results were a marked improvement in April's, but we are going to continue to support this for the foreseeable future. The inbound investor receipts are well short of the euro 10 million market we set for ourselves, 10 million mark we set for ourselves a couple of months ago. And indeed, as you can see, the leasing side of the market becomes more interesting. We're looking to reopen that market in the coming weeks too. So Andrew will let you know once that decision has been finalized. But on the investable side, we're going to hold a 2% plus rate and continuing the 1% intermediary commission. And let's see what the summer months bring. So Andrew's been asked to ensure he lets all the intermediaries know this after this briefing and make sure that you're aware of these offerings. So to finish the briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA or evolving sale agreements of euro 17.43 million. And this concludes the month's briefing for May 2021. Thank you very much. Has anyone any questions? Noel, you normally have one.
I do actually.
Pardon?
I do actually. You mentioned the construction side of the business there.
Yeah.
What are you looking at when it comes to construction at the moment?
In terms of what specifically? These are all companies that we would have been doing business with. I would say in the main, and Andrew might check it out, but in the main, all of the companies that we're dealing with in the construction sector were companies that we were dealing with up until March of 2020 that have basically gone to sleep and are now back in business. Don't believe construction ever rose to more than about 20% of our business. So at 12%, it's heading back in the right direction. I know that we have lost some construction companies, either because they no longer need our service or they are no longer trading or are waiting to get back to trading. But the ones that we are dealing with are all prior customers that have been with us for two or more years. What specific sectors are they in? Retrofitting, things like relining houses for the BER scheme under contracts to local county councils. Other people are in, I would call them subcontractors at the high end, specialist roofing guys who are the only people who can fix the, St. Patrick's Church or whatever. Any other ones, Andrew, that you can think of?
A building materials supplier. I know which specific company about that.
Would he fall under construction, though, or would he fall under wholesaler? This is why we don't This is why we want to change the NACE category, because I don't even know the answer to that question.
That's a good idea.
So there, people have been with us for a long time, mostly subcontractors. I don't believe we've got any main contractors. Or they are subcontractors directly into county councils.
And say for new, somebody who would have contracts with council at the moment, and the contracts are there that the council will purchase the properties from them, but they need to finance them and build them out first, and they have all the letters of relief and everything like that. But they're finding that the likes of Finance Ireland are taking months and months and months and months to actually, they've agreed to do it, but there's always something else in that happens, and it's taking forever to get money.
Yeah, I think...
What is the story there?
Well, the story there is we don't provide finance to property, but as soon as we say that, we have done two direct provisioning centres, or finance, I should say, two direct provisioning centres, where they were taking X Hotel, which is in Nama or somewhere. They were going to refurbish it, and it was going direct. So it wasn't going through any, before coming a direct provisioning centre, you're called something else, emergency accommodation or something. They were going into direct provisioning for 3 and 5 year contracts. So we would regard that as a trade transaction, because it relates to a direct Department of Justice, I think, look after those contracts. So that's your ultimate debtor. So yeah, of course you're going to write that business. So if you've got a county council, I have come across people prior to March of last year who had approached us. They either had the property, but they hadn't got the contract from the county council. They had the contract from the county council, but they didn't have the property. Nobody came to us with both, apart from the guys in the direct provisioning. But if you know people who've got a county council requirement, they want to buy that strip of houses and they want to put them all into social housing, and these guys can do it, and they need 250,000 or whatever it is to make that transaction happen. Absolutely. Why would we not support that?
Well, what I'm looking at, I have a guy who currently has deals done with the county council for 28 houses, which are going to go to social housing. And there's another lot of 12, and 6 of those are going to go to social housing. And he has at least half of one lot built on the promise that he's going to get the finance, which has been agreed apparently, but there's always something else that's coming up looking for it. And he's now in a situation where he just has to stop at the moment.
Okay. Well, if you'd pass that on to Andrew after this call,
I will, yeah.
We'll get someone on the deal desk to look into it and see if it might make commercial sense. Yeah, if it makes commercial sense, we'll do it.
Yeah.
You know how the trade desk takes risks, so yeah.
Yep.
Sure.
It might be worth looking at. It might be an opportunity, because this guy has more stuff coming up all the time, and he has great contacts with the councils and has done a lot of work over the years with them. But he's just finding the access to finance now has slowed up for it.
Very good. Okay. No. Anything
Thanks,
else
Patrick.
For anyone? No. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Talk to you guys in the next month.
Thanks.
Okay, cheers. Thanks. Bye-bye.